भूतेषु चापचेष्वनु प्रविष्ठान्या प्रविष्ठानि तथा तेषु नतेष्वहम्।
As the material elements enter the bodies of all living beings and yet remain outside of them all, I exist within all material creations and yet am not within them. Report by Srila Prabhupada. The gross material elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, combine with the subtle material elements, mind, intelligence, and false ego, to construct the bodies of this material world. And yet they are beyond these bodies as well. Any material construction is nothing but an amalgamation or combination of material elements in various proportions. These elements exist both within and beyond the body. For example, although the sky exists in space, it also enters within the body. Similarly, the Supreme Lord, who is the cause of the material energy, lives within the material world as well as beyond it. Without his presence within the material world, the cosmic body could not develop. Just as without the presence of the spirit within the physical body, the body could not develop. The entire material manifestation develops and exists because the Supreme Personality of Godhead enters it as Paramatma, or the Supersoul. The Personality of Godhead, in his all-pervading feature of Paramatma, enters every entity from the biggest to the most minute. How Lord Sri Krishna is existing both within and without of everything that exists is here explained. Krishna says in the Gita, for one who sees me everywhere and everything in me, for him I am never lost, nor is he ever lost to me. Anato anayan mahato mahiyan. Krishna is larger than the largest, but he is also smaller than the smallest. He is the larger than the largest in the sense we can understand that Mahavishnu, who is an expansion of Sri Krishna. First there is Sri Krishna. He expands himself as Baladev, who expands himself as the Chaturvyuha, the primary Chaturvyuha. They expand them Aniruddha, Shankarshad, Pradyumna, Vasudev. Chaturvyuha expands as Narayan. And from Narayan comes the secondary quadruple expansion of the Lord. And from then, when it is time for the creation of this material energy, or not material energy, but the material existence, then the expansion of the Lord expands again into Karunodakshayi Vishnu, who is Mahavishnu. Maha means bigger than the biggest. He is so great that although when we see something big in this world, we think it's very wonderful. Anything that's big according to its relative species or according to its relative relationships with its own kind in this world is considered very great. It's like there is the Hope Diamond. It is perhaps the largest diamond in the world, and millions of people go to the museum to see this large diamond. Similarly, if a zoo has the largest tiger or the largest elephant, it becomes very famous because it has the largest of its kind. And if somebody is very big or very tall or very strong, that person becomes very well known. Of all mountains in the world today, what is the most famous mountain? It is Mount Everest. Why? Because it is the biggest mountain. And of all buildings, what is the most famous building for so many years was Empire State Building, because it was the most famous building on earth, because it was the biggest building. Now more famous is the Sears Building, because it's bigger. So in this way, people are very much attracted to something big, something great in size. It's like at Govardhan Puja, we were seeing so many nice mountains of prasad, and the bigger they were, the more awe and reverence everyone had for them. So this is a natural opulence that attracts the heart. It's something very big within this creation. If a person has a big reputation, or if he has a big bank balance, he becomes very famous. So Krishna says, Mahato Mahiyan, I am bigger than the biggest. And as Mahavishnu, he is giving evidence how he is bigger than the biggest. Within this planet, if something is big, like Mount Everest, you think, oh, such a very great thing. People from all over the world were coming to try to climb, to be the first to climb Mount Everest. What are they going to gain by climbing Mount Everest? There's nothing up there but ice, the same ice that's in your freezer. Why are they risking their lives? Going through months and months of training and months just to get up there to just see some ice. Because it's big. Because they've done something so big, they became famous. They're in all the history books. The first man who climbed Mount Everest. And this is just one little mountain, one little country, and one little planet. If you look at the map, of India, Mount Everest is not very big. If you look at the map of the world, Mount Everest is not very big. So how big do we consider so big? But just see how Krishna, he is bigger than the biggest. That this whole earth is just a speck within the universe. And this whole universe is so insignificant that Mahavishnu, while he's resting, big man is somebody who doesn't really have to work so hard to get things done, right? A small man has to struggle and toil just to get any little thing done. Yeah? You see, we acknowledge somebody as being very big. If he could, by his, without really putting much energy, he could get great things done. So Krishna has a great sense of humor. He has Mahavishnu has Maha sense of humor. He wants to just completely eclipse everyone's greatness by his own. You consider yourself a great man, you can get some big things done without working so hard. Well, just see what I'm going to do. I'm going to sleep and see what happens when I go to sleep. He falls into the yoga nidra. He's sound asleep. His eyes are closed. And when he exhales, from the pores of his body come billions, quadrillions of universes. These universes are coming out from the pores of his body by the trillions, by the quadrillions, innumerable, countless universes. And within each universe, so many planets, so many living entities, everything. How he is creating. Therefore, he is Mahato Mahiyan. He is bigger than the biggest. Anahato Aniyan. To be very small is also a great opulence. The Japanese are very famous because they can take something and make it very small. They're the most powerful economic country in the world, perhaps now. Why? Because they can take things that man has made that take up so much size, and they could get the same function done through that in a very small size. And if you see something very tiny, a little tiny computer, a little tiny tape recorder that could perform all the works, we think, my God, this is great. Of course, try to understand the necessity that
There's about 15 million Sid people living in the city of Tokyo, and everybody lives in a room half this size, so just by their conditioning, they make things very small. It's actually a miserable existence that's forced them to take shelter of making everything very small.
But still, they are practically controlling the economy of the world. One little tiny country. Japan is just a little tiny shoestring country. But because they've learned how to do great things in small sizes,
they are great. But how great?
That same Mahavishnu, who is of such an immense size that all universes are coming out of his body, by his glance, he impregnates all living beings within the universe, each one. It explains that he expands himself as Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. From his navel sprouts a lotus flower. On that lotus flower, Lord Brahma is born. Lord Brahma hears the words tapa, perform tapasya. He performs tapasya. Through his tapasya, he is given a vision of the spiritual world, and he's given the empowerment by Garbhodakshaya Vishnu how to create all the planets and all the living species of life, 8,400,000. And then that same Mahavishnu that is so great, he enters as the Paramatma, the Super Soul, in the heart of every living being. That is smaller than the smallest. It is said in the Bhagavatam that the Paramatma in the heart is the size of the upper portion of the thumb. Now, what is the size of the upper portion of a thumb of a mosquito? Huh? That's how big he is in the heart of a mosquito. And yet, although he is so incredibly tiny, it's like we were talking about Japanese manufacturers, when they make a computer that can hold so much data, but it's small size, very great. 20 years ago, if you wanted a computer in your office, just the, I don't want to know what you call it, the hardware, software, it would be twice the size of this room. You remember? Computer would be just the size of the room. But now you can have all that information, all that data stored in a computer that's only the size of your desk and smaller. It's considered great. Now how great is Krishna? As the Paramatma, how much data is in the Paramatma? Within your heart, in a minute, tiny size, that part of, and even in the heart of a mosquito, even in the heart of a gnat and an ant, within that heart of that living being is a Paramatma that knows everything that that ant has ever done in all his previous lives. And not only everything that that ant has done, he knows everything that every living creature that has ever existed in the spiritual and material worlds, he knows everything they've done, everything that they're doing, and everything that they're going to do. Can anyone create any computer, any size?
In the future.
In the future. Yes, in the future. That is Krishna. Nato mahiyana nato aniyana. He is bigger than the biggest and smaller than the smallest. And therefore he is considered, this is how we understand God is great.
So in this way, Krishna is manifesting himself. And the more we understand how Krishna manifests himself, the more we understand how great is God. the Prabhupada would often tell us that in many religions it is said that God is great, but how is God great? The more we understand how great He is, the more we have great reverence, and the more we will love Him. And when Krishna comes to this material world, He does not come. He appears like an ordinary man, but then He performs the greatness of God, just to show the world how God is great, to attract the world to Him. And because God is infinite, and because our mind and intelligence is finite, we cannot understand, we cannot conceive of the greatness of God. It is not possible. Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 13th chapter, that I shall now explain the knowable, knowing which you will taste the eternal. This is beginningless, and it is subordinate to me. It is called Brahman, the spirit, and it lies beyond the cause and effect of this material world. Everywhere are His hands and legs, His eyes and faces, and He hears everything. In this way, the Supersoul exists. Here in this verse, Krishna is explaining how His transcendental eyes see everything everywhere. His transcendental hands can receive offerings anywhere in any place. His ears hears everything everywhere. This is the glory of God. If a devotee, whether he is sitting in a prison cell, whether he's in Vaikuntha, whether he's in at the bottom of the ocean, anywhere a devotee may be, if he offers Krishna something, even a leaf, a flower, fruit, or water, with devotion, Krishna accepts it. His hand is there to accept it. His mouth is there to taste it. He hears everything. He sees everything. In this way, the Supersoul exists. This is the greatness of God. The Supersoul is the original source of all senses. Yet He is without senses. He is unattached, although He is the maintainer of all living beings. He transcends the modes of nature, and at the same time He is the master of all the modes of nature. The Supreme Truth exists both internally and externally, in the moving and non-moving. He is beyond the power of the material senses to see or to know. Although far, far away, He is also near to all. Although the Supersoul appears to be divided, He is never divided. He is situated as one. Although He is the maintainer of every living entity, it is to be understood that He devours and develops all. He is the source of light in all luminous objects. He is beyond the darkness of matter and is unmanifested. He is knowledge. He is the object of knowledge. He is the goal of knowledge. He is situated in everyone's heart. And then the secret to understand Krishna is given. What Krishna has just spoken here in Gita, who can understand it? On a very superficial level, we can say, yes, I understand. But nobody can understand. How could Krishna be far away and yet near? How could He be both within and without? How could He be both knowable and unknowable? Every possible contradiction simultaneously exists within the Absolute Truth. Because the Absolute Truth is filled with every conceivable and inconceivable contradiction. He is bigger than the biggest, smaller than the smallest. He is the farthest away of anybody, and yet He's the nearest. He's within, He's without. He's knowable, He's unknowable. He's everything. Krishna is everything. And then Krishna goes on and says, although I'm everything, I'm separate. I'm not everything. For Krishna to be everything, that means he also has to be not everything. Huh? Can you understand that? Shamanand? What? He's everything, yet he's not everything. It's a contradiction. But in the absolute truth, there is infinite contradictions. Because when we speak of infinite, we are speaking of beyond the finite realm of comprehension. The Zen Buddhists, to try to get your mind away from the temporary conditioned way of seeing reality, they have these what they call koans, just to try to completely disturb your mind in such a way that you just give up all hope in logic. Like they'll have their disciple sit there, this is a common example, and meditate for weeks on what is the sound of one hand clapping. We're talking about a process. And the student, until he can give the proper answer to that, he has to just sit in silence, meditating only on that. Figuring out what is the sound of one hand clapping. And after weeks, sometimes months, sometimes years, for 18, 20 hours a day, a person is just sitting and with his back erect, meditating on what is the sound? And ultimately what happens is, as we say in the West, their minds just become blown. They just explode and they realize that they don't have any mind anymore. Their mind is totally blown to pieces by trying to figure out what's inconceivable. And when they don't have any mind anymore, they attain nirvana. Because after all suffering is because you're attached to your mind, and your mind is making so many discriminations between heat and cold and happiness and distress and pleasure and pain. All sufferings are due to the discriminatory nature of the mind, choosing what we like, choosing what we don't like. So this process is just to completely blow your mind to smithereens, and then you don't have a mind anymore. Then you're enlightened. That is their idea, enlightenment. But in any case, we understand through this example that the absolute truth is full of every type of contradiction and inconceivable potency. Therefore, he cannot be understood through scholarship. He could not be understood through studying the Vedanta. He cannot be understood through any amount of logic. When Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was with Gopinath Acharya, Gopinath told him that you are the greatest logician in all the world. I admit it. You're the greatest grammatical scholar in all the world. You are people from all over the country. Even the greatest renunciates come to learn Vedanta from you. But you'll never understand Lord Chaitanya, because it's not through this process. What is the process? Here Krishna is explaining in the 13th chapter of the Gita his nature, which is utterly inconceivable and contradictory, and which is beyond the realm of the mind to understand. But then he concludes this particular sector of the Bhagavad Gita with this verse. Thus the field of activities, the body, knowledge, and the knowable, have been summarily described by me. Only my devotees can understand this thoroughly and thus attain to my nature. The Sanskrit is iti kshetram tatta jnanam yeyam choktam samashata. I'm quoting the Sanskrit because sometimes commentators of the Bhagavad Gita, they say when Krishna says devotee, he means only my jnani or only my only one who is in knowledge. But what does Krishna say? He says, iti kshetram tata jnanam yeyam shoktam samashita. This means this field of activities, all that is knowable, all that is unknowable, that I have just described in summary. Madbhakta etad vigyaya madbhavayo bhajyate. Madbhakta, my devotee. Only my devotees can understand this thoroughly and thus attain my nature. So to go on with Srila Prabhupada's purport, this wonderful verse from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, after Srila Prabhupada explains the greatness and the glory of Lord Sri Krishna, he explains how the personality of Godhead and his all-pervading feature of Paramatma enters every entity from the biggest to the most minute. His existence can be realized by one, this is important, his existence can be realized by one who has the single qualification I will repeat this. His existence, we're talking about the inconceivable, uncomprehendable, full of all contradictions, his existence can be realized by one who has the single qualification of submissiveness. And who thereby becomes a surrendered soul. The development of submissiveness is the cause of proportionate spiritual realization. Krishna reveals himself to his devotee according to the intensity of that devotee's submissiveness alone. In the 10th canto, we read about the yajnik brahmins. They were learned. They were expert at the ritual, at the sacrifice. They could not understand who is Krishna. Their wives had no qualification except one. They were submissive. Krishna wanted their food. They gave their food. The Brahmins had every other qualification except submissiveness. And they were left out. The wives had no qualification except submissiveness. And they were given entrance into the highest realization. The development of submissiveness is the cause of proportionate spiritual realization, by which one can ultimately meet the Supreme Person in person as a man meets another man face to face. Because of his development of transcendental attachment for the Lord, a surrendered soul feels the presence of the Beloved everywhere, and all his senses are engaged in the loving service of the Lord. And here, so beautifully, Prabhupada is describing how a devotee experiences Krishna everywhere and in everything. I would like to ask you, how does a devotee on a practical level experience Krishna everywhere, in and everything? Radha Gopinath?
By seeing that everything is behind everything, he is the one who
is. That is something theoretical. That's a mental adjustment, right? at least at our stage. But how to actually experience Krishna everywhere and in everything. I'll give you a hint. Let us quote Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. Don't try to see Krishna, but...
So, it's in the way that Krishna comes to see.
That is the answer. A devotee experiences Krishna everywhere and in everything because he's always engaging in Krishna's service. And Prabhupada describes here how a devotee always engages in Krishna's service. All his senses are engaged. And says, because of his development of transcendental attachment for the Supreme Lord, a surrendered soul feels the presence of his beloved everywhere, and all his senses are engaged in the loving service of the Lord. His eyes are engaged in seeing the beautiful couple of Sri Radha and Krishna sitting on a decorated throne beneath the desire tree in the transcendental land of Vrindavan. Sri Sri Radha Gopinath Ki Jai. His nose is engaged in smelling the spiritual aroma of the lotus feet of the Lord. Similarly, his ears are engaged in hearing messages from Vaikuntha, and his hands embrace the lotus feet of the Lord and his associates. Thus, the Lord is manifested to a pure devotee from within and without. This is one of the mysteries of the devotional relationship in which a devotee and the Lord are bound by a tie of spontaneous love. To achieve this love should be the goal of life for every living being. Krishna speaks in Gita, Bhaktya mam abhijanati yavan yashchasmi tattvata. It is only by devotional service that I can be understood as I am. Don't try to see Krishna, but try to serve Krishna in such a way that he will be inspired to reveal himself to you. This is the great mystery of the school of bhakti, that as we were explaining previously, although the Lord is invisible, he is also has the power to become visible. Invisible meaning to the material senses. Although the argument is that which is finite cannot perceive the infinite. It's not comprehensible. It's totally illogical for the finite to be able to perceive the infinite. Is it not? If you're finite, how can you experience what is infinite? Therefore, if the finite is able to see the infinite, that would make the finite infinite. This is the impersonalist school. This is their conclusion. To know God means to become God. But they cannot understand the path of grace, the path of bhakti, which is, if the infinite does not have the power to make himself known to the finite, he is not infinite. Because infinite means that there's nothing that he cannot do. And one of his great, great opulences is he could reveal his infinite glory to the finite, to the jivatma. And when does he reveal his infinite glory to the jivatma? When the living entity pleases him. And what pleases him? To be the servant. To be the servant of his servants. Mad bhakta puja vridhika. One who pleases my devotee pleases me supremely. One who is a humble servant of my servant is most dear to me. So this is the real conclusion of understanding and going beyond all the contradictions and all the conflicting truths within the absolute truth. Is simply to become the humble servant of the servant of the servant. And through this process of being submissive, surrendered, Krishna reveals everything to his devotee. Is there any questions? Yes.
Samhita, about Shankar, obedience to the will of Govinda, Shandu maintains and fosters the religion of pure devotion by preaching the cult of illusionism, Mayavad. So, this preaching of Mayavad, it fosters the cult of pure devotion.
It did what?
Shandu maintains and fosters the religion of pure devotion by preaching the cult of Mayavad. That Shambhu, that state of Krishna is called Shambhu or Shankar, Shiva. And he fosters pure devotion by preaching Mayavad.
It's like how am I trying to foster knowledge in Radha Gopinath by asking him difficult questions? Fostering means to gradually bring one to that, just like a foster father. To foster someone means to gradually bring that person to the mature state. Everything God does is perfect. Krishna, Lord Narayan, directly and personally sent Lord Shankar to this material world for the purpose presenting this Mayavad philosophy. For several reasons. One is that the people of the world, they were already convinced, especially here in the land of Bharatvarsha, they were convinced by Lord Buddha, who was one of the 10 primary avatars of Vishnu, to accept his teachings, in which, out of necessity, he had to abandon the Vedas and basically taught a process of ahimsa, self-control, and morality, which people didn't have previous to that. So, but he taught nirvishesh, sunyavad. He taught a concept of the absolute truth where he did not discuss any personal features. It was a voidist philosophy, a salvationist philosophy. And Shankar came to reestablish the Vedas, because it is only through the authority of the Vedas, which means the word of God, that ultimately bhakti can be fostered. Correct? But he did it in such a secret way that he convinced the whole of India to accept the Vedas, because he did not stir things up too much to accept the conclusion of Buddha on the basis of the Vedas. And then he called it God. He called that voidistic conception God. So he was giving people a connection to the idea of Brahman or God, and he was keeping people close to Vedas, knowing that that was just part of the mission in which Ramanuja, Madhva, and ultimately Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would come and say, you are accepting there is Brahman. Yes, well, look at what the Vedas say, that there is Brahman, but there is Parabrahman. He glorified Krishna in Gita. And then when the great acharyas like Ramanuja came And they explained, you see, you say you Shankar has taught you to accept Gita and accept Krishna. Well, what does Krishna say? Madhbhakta pujabhi bhaktya mam abhijanati bhaktya twananiya shakya. It's only by devotion that you can understand me as the Supreme Person. So in this way, he was gradually fostering all living beings in this universe toward bhakti, indirectly. And on another level, this is also very important to understand, that first Vishnu instructed Shiva that you come as Shankaracharya, you come as a Brahmin boy, and you teach this Mayavad philosophy, which is covered Buddhism. He also says by doing that, you will progress the influence of the age of Kali. Because this idea that you're God, I'm God, everything's God, although he taught his disciples to be very strict, that whole conception can so easily be perverted that if I'm God and you're God, then it doesn't matter what we do. Right? And then there's illicit sex, and then there's unwanted population, and then Kali Yuga just is full speed ahead. How is that fostering bhakti? Because it is in the midst of this, it is in the midst of the greatest degradation of Kali Yuga that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appears. Just like Narada Muni, he went and told Kamsa that Krishna is God. Krishna is the eighth son of David. Now, Kamsa was sending demons everywhere to kill all the children. But he never knew Krishna was the eighth son of Devaki. It was just before Kamsa sent Akrura to Vrindavan that Narada Muni just came to Kamsa and he said, do you want to know something? Do you want to know who the eighth son of Devaki is in Vasudeva? You've been wondering for the last 12, 13 years? It's Krishna, son of Nanda. It's him. Not only that, but when Kamsa, when Vasudeva and Devaki first had their child, Kirtiman, Narada Muni told him that you want to know something? That not only God is going to appear, but all the demigods are going to appear with him, and they're all appearing in the Yadu dynasty, so any one of these people could be your enemy. So. And he started killing everybody. So what did Narada Muni do? He stirred up the most tragic, terrible scenario imaginable. He stirred up Kamsa to be killing everybody everywhere. Why? Because it would hasten the appearance of the Lord. The Lord appears when things get the worst. And Narada Muni wanted him to come fast. So, Shankar is Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu. Shambhu is Vishnu, but appearing in a different way, in appearing as a devotee. And he is serving in the same mission as Narada Muni, in one sense, Shankaracharya. By teaching a philosophy which would cause such incredible degradation in human society that the Yuga Avatar of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would come fast. So in this way, yes, his mission of spreading Mayavad philosophy was to foster bhakti in the ultimate sense. And not only that, but the more degraded things are, the more glorious Krishna is when he comes. Namo Mahabhara Nyaya Krishna Prema Padayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namane Gaura Krishna Maha. Rupa Goswami says that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the most munificent, the greatest of all avatars. Why? Because he's doing what nobody else has ever done. He's taking the most fallen, wretched people of Kali Yuga and giving them the highest realization of conjugal love of God. indiscriminately. Lord Chaitanya is not so is most famous when he delivers the most phalam. When Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu delivered Jagai and Madai, of everyone he delivered, he's most famous for that, because they were the most representatives of Kali Yuga. They were drunkards, they were thieves, they were woman hunters, they were murderers, they were blasphemers, they were everything. And he's glorified for delivering Jagai and Madhai. So Shankar wanted Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's divine incarnation to be as glorious as possible, as Patita Pavan Avatar. Therefore he directed the world to be as degraded as they possibly could be, so that when he would come, he would be that much more glorious. Because this Mayavad philosophy of you're God, I'm God, everything's God, it just, when it comes down, when the big sannyasis, they're renounced. But when it comes down to the general mass of people, it means do your own thing. I'm all right, you're all right, everything's all right. No need for morality, because after all, we're all God, and God is the father of morality. Right? So whatever I do is perfect. Isn't that the way people think? So actually his mission was, in disguise, all meant to glorify the advent of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.